Good evening, everyone. Thanks for coming out tonight. Really appreciate it. Great to see all of you gathered here. It's nice that we have to squish around the table. Wonderful. I'm John Stevens. Some of you know me, some of you may not. And officially, I'm in charge of St. John's policy here. Essentially, the way it's working right now is that means that Andrew Pike does everything on a Sunday morning, and he and I converse and keep in touch. I'm actually rector of St. Philip's in Dunmar, and the archdeacon of the area. So that's sort of where that role comes in. And we're in a place of transition at the moment until we work out the clearer direction of where we're going with things. So delighted to have you here tonight, and we will begin with a gathering prayer and perhaps meditation led by Andrew, and then we will talk about the agenda for tonight. So let's just start with prayer.
Can I just say something before we it just as John was talking about sort of that I'm here sort of on the ground, maybe I should say something about very briefly about how that came to be. Bishop Michael had, in fact, a fairly definite, it wasn't definite, but a fairly definite appointment for a year. A person was coming from England and was due to arrive to start on the 25th of September. And in conversation with Bishop Michael, just before we say yes, definitely, I've just got one little thing I've got to do. And that little thing was to go to see his doctor, who diagnosed early stages of cancer. And so he said, look, I'm sorry, it's all off. And that happened 10 days before we began. And so I was happy in retirement. And Bishop Michael and this fellow of some mischief said, we need you. And so that's how I came to be here. I'm happy to be here. Thank you very much.
We're happy to have you.
Yes.
Amen.
Let me begin with just reading a very well known short passage from the fourth chapter of the letter of Paul to the Ephesians, where Paul writes, I, therefore, a prisoner in the Lord, beg you to lead a life worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, making every effort to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called to the one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all, and through all, and in all. Each of us was given grace according to the measure of Christ's gift. We pray. Gracious God, we gather in love, mindful of your generosity to us and to all humanity, and yet also mindful of how often we stray. We pray that you would bless us in our various understandings of ministry and purpose and call, that we may always serve you faithfully. In Christ's name. Amen.
Amen. I put together a very loose agenda, and it is a loose agenda. Really, the purpose is to bring folks together and have a bit of a conversation more than anything. And so I wanted to just start with a couple of things, but really, if you will, the agenda is yours on for the most part. As I said, just a few things that I want to touch on. But what I'm hoping is this is an opportunity just to hear from folks who are part of the life of St. John Shaughnessy now, and just hear your thoughts, concerns, just have some discussion, some dialogue. That's the plan. And so I'm hoping the agenda will help with that rather than get in the way with that. But if there will be lots of opportunity for you to ask questions or to start some discussion, and we'll just see where things go, okay? But I did want to start with, I've called it a report, that's probably a bit of a stretch, but a report about worship on Sunday mornings, and obviously Andrew is the one to lead us with that.
Well, worship has, as you know, changed from night and day, or from day to night, I think, probably, on Sunday mornings. There's been such a huge shift. As probably many of you know, that there's numbers at on a Sunday mornings are very small. Although I would love to say that they're growing every week. That's not true, because we're down a little bit last week. Lots of people have asked me, lots of people around the masses, say, well, how's it going? And my answer consistently has been absolutely genuine, to say, while the numbers are small, the feeling, the atmosphere, is very good. Mm-hmm. There's a joy and a real sort of sense of celebration that goes on at services, I think. That comes out in various ways. We don't have a choir, and yet there's, I think, relatively good singing. People seem to feel, you know, there's no choir, so I've got to do it. And the same thing with responses. The responses are strong, the participation is good, and for that I'm very grateful, and, you know, long may I keep going. Because as you know, when there are choirs and people around them, and lots of people tend to mumble. And I've always said it's so important for me, an example being, you know, when we start at the beginning of the service, we have this interesting phrase, you know, that we're all with you and also with you. And sometimes it comes across like an absolutely meaningless exchange. That's just the sign that we're beginning, so let's get going. And I don't feel that at all, because the presider is praying for you. May God be with you as you worship. And the people are saying, and may God bless you as you lead us. Mm-hmm. And there's this exchange of prayer, and that sort of thing, I find, you know, so important when people, you know, give that back to me, mm-hmm. and do it strongly and say it's a long one. anyway, that's where we're at. I'm very appreciative to Paul, who is leading our music at the moment. We had Chris for 3 weeks at the beginning. He played piano, very good pianist. He's involved in a master's program at UBC in the music school, and not in a position to do it permanently. Under the leadership of Dan Loomer, the new choir that she started, Encore, is going to be singing here probably for the rest of December. And when I say probably, it's because she said definitely, and then put it to her choir, and it was only going to be a small portion of the choir. The Encore choir is about 55 people, about 50 people, and they're all 55 and over. Of those, she said, we'll have 12 to 16 each Sunday. And they plan to not take over the music, but to lead an introit and to help with the singing of the hymns, and probably have an anthem as well. And she, Diane Loomer, and I had some very serious discussions about performance and worship, and how they can't, performance can't impinge on the worship nature. And so the long and short of it is, we're doing it this coming Sunday, and then there's an evaluation as to whether we keep going. She has found it actually relatively hard to get that number of voices, because any of the people in the choir who are involved in churches sing in their own church choir. But she says she has 12 outside of the here. But the one thing they can't do, which we were hoping they would do, is sing at the midnight service at Christmas, because they said 100% of them are going to their own churches for that service. And so that's one. The other part of that is that on the 15th of December, the full choir of Christchurch Cathedral will be here to lead us in a carol service under the direction of Rupert Lang. I don't think it's unfair of them, but they're going to use this as their dress rehearsal for their carol service on the 18th, which is a couple of days later. And so we'll see how that goes. So, thank you very much. I have in my hand, most people who have been coming to church have given us information about who they are and addresses and phone numbers and email, which is very helpful. If you haven't done that, could you please do that and check if you're on.
Any particular questions about Sunday mornings or comments to Andrew?
Are we trying to recruit a choir of our own, or what's?
Well, I think we have to get a sort of a critical mass first.
Yes.
I'm not sure. It'd be wonderful. I mean, we could start with a quartet or something like that. But I think we would hope that by the new year we can start to find enough people in the choir, in the congregation, who would like to give leadership. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't want that leadership to impinge on the participation of the congregation. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the problem.
I'm just wondering, I think bringing up a choir as under direction, as professional as we know this choir would be, would this be on a voluntary basis, or is this a budgetary item?
It's a budgetary item, in as much as the singers in the choir are voluntary. The musicians, they would be bringing, when they sing alone, they like to have their own pianist. They're also going to bring a harpsichord person, and they would get an honorarium. And they would expect an honorarium to their choir as a whole, but not to the singers individually. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So we're in real terms right now, we're budgeting, or we're seeing approximately $20,000 a month as a deficit, from what I understand as a trustee. What would this add to the deficit? Bearing in mind that it's probably a good investment, but I just, in realistic terms, want to hear what it is.
It would probably add a couple of thousand.
Okay, thank you.
But the diocese is planning to cover that, so it's...
Sorry?
The diocese is planning to cover that.
Oh, good. So I hope they're going to cover everything.
I try to words carefully so that I... But that's the plan.
Okay.
Are there anything else just about Sunday morning?
I just wanted to add a thank you, Stephen, because I come at 8 o'clock and he's been there every time.
Oh, great. Yeah, on
piano.
Piano.
Yeah,
that's great. Wonderful. That's great. Sorry, Malcolm?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, in terms of attendances breakdown, I think we've got an average of, what, about 6 or 8 at the
early
service?
Yes. It is varied from... a low of 3 to a high of 13. And so it's quite variable. It's interesting how, as it's probably circumstances. But in other places I've been, I've never had a phone call or apology before Sunday to say, I'm so sorry, I won't be there on Sunday. But don't forget, I'm with you. And in fact, it's about, I got about three phone calls about tonight to say, you know, I would love to be there. People were phoning, a phone call from Toronto and a phone call from New York.
And I've gone to Montreal. And you've gone to Montreal.
You know, and so people are very conscious of the need to be committed.
Yeah.
And, I think it's just a scan of your own.
Thank you.
Or not.
Thank you.
Yeah. I met a woman, Michelle, who has done voice as a graduate of UC Music School, that she's within the Sunday morning tenders, and I think we should maybe see if we could find some leadership that she might give to you know, the more indigenous music side of it, and that would have to be brought by someone, but that's where she has that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Anything else?
I endorse that, and I was thinking maybe she would be interested in our midnight or 11 p.m. service.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. That's a good point. Thank you.
She's not at our table, but there's somebody that knows her well.
Okay. Great. Anything else? Okay, I'm going to move on to something different from that, and that is, I've described it as report from trustees. That's probably not quite what I'm looking for, but it's just more of a sense that it's important for folks to know who the trustees are, because I'm not sure if that's clear, and probably just to tell you a few things that the trustees are at least thinking about it at this point. Officially, sorry, just so I stand so you can see me. Officially, I'm the chair of the trustees. It's a kind of funny role because I'm not fully active in the life of this parish, but that's the role I've been given. Paul is also a trustee, and Ian, and Michael, and Malcolm, and George. That's probably the easiest way to describe who the trustees are. There's possibly some movement going on with them, but at the moment, that's who they are. And it's a complicated situation with the trustees. Just to name that, and to be honest about that, it's the trustees were elected at the last vestry meeting of St. John's Chaumacy, and I'm assuming that was February. I know I've got the note somewhere, February of this year. And so these folks have remained in that position as trustees going forward. And until there is an election of new trustees at another vestry meeting. So we, as trustees, are wrestling with a few things. Obviously, finances are one. That's an enormous issue at the moment. Trying to work out what we have and also what's needed going forward. And it, as you can guess, it's rather complicated. As Andrew alluded to right at the beginning, this is a very different parish congregation than it was a number of months ago. And so to begin with, we really weren't sure how many folks would be here, certainly for the first Sunday and then going forward, people who are actually part of the life of the parish going forward. And so there's a lot of complicated things that go along with it. As you can imagine, just even regular either maintenance or just the running of this rather large plant is not something that is easy to just simply step in and take over and move forward with. So there's been a few complications with that, that's for sure. There's also an issue with, I guess, one of the rectories of the parish. There's a relationship with that, with the Shorts, who are presently living in part of it is their home, and part of it belongs to the parish. Mm-hmm. And we're looking to try to sell that sometime soon, and I'll just say it's complicated, and we're trying to find a way forward as soon as possible with that. But it's been a little bit difficult, to say the least. But I thought it was very important that, A, you make sure that you know who the trustees are, and also that they get to know get to know some of you folks. I don't know if anyone wants to add, looking towards the trustees, if anyone wants to add any comments or thoughts or what have you.
Names, but we don't.
I went very fast.
I just wondered if they could identify.
That would be better. Why don't they introduce themselves and thank you. That's a better way to do it.
Well, I'm George Edgerton, and
I can't hear you, sir.
I'm George Edgerton, and for many years a member of St. Philip's, and therefore know John from Virgil. And many here, well, at least a few here, are friends of many years standing, and let me assure you that the divisions and fractures that we've experienced over the last few years are much to be regretted, as I've lost contact with many old friends. Now, as a trustee, all of us are trying to do the best we can in unprecedented circumstances with many legal tangles that we're attempting to resolve through this very complex period of transition. But let me assure you from myself, and I'm sure from the other trustees, that we're trying to do the best job we can in this transition, in looking after the interests of the parish corporation here, and trying to do the best we can in terms of the rebuilding of a congregation under the Anglican Church of Canada here. So that's what we hope for the best, and we are trying to do an honest job in all of this.
Thanks.
Malcolm Ross, I'm the treasurer, and the only comment that I would add to that is that Beth Tennant, who is working in as the administrator, is someone that would welcome your company at any time. And this is actually a very, very important thing, because from Monday to Friday, other than when Andrew is here, she is one person walking around what can often have the sense of being a mausoleum. No, seriously. So I say that Bev is doing a great job. She is really trying to serve the congregation and deal with things. But if there's an opportunity for you to give her a phone call just to chat and encourage her, if you can pop in, if you have the opportunity to volunteer, just that companionship and support, I think, is a very important part. Bev was recruited as someone who was not part of any congregation. She's a Catholic by background, but she's a very loving, serving, committed Christian. And my comment to you is, we can deal with all the technical things, but the people things here, and taking care of the people who are hopefully trying to take care of things for us, is really an important part of what we've got to do.
Mike Bentley. I was actually elected as a rector's warden last February, and I just want to echo those comments. And the good news is, in terms of our financial situation, which is a concern to me, after having signed $7,000 worth of checks at the end of last week, which is almost twice what our offerings were in October. So the good news is, the church was left in good condition with bequest funds and all that kind of thing in order. But it's imperative that we step up to the plate as much as we can, which in simple language, we need five times growth in our offerings and or the support of the diocese. Otherwise, we'll continue to erode what has been left for us. And that is something that the trustees have not wanted to do for many years. So it's just an issue that we should be aware of. And so, but also, from my perspective, I've known Andrew for a long time. He married my wife and I, and it worked out fine. I can still remember what he said. At least from my perspective, unless he might disagree. But Andrew gave us great advice at the wedding, and I've known John for a long time, and I consider them both to be friends, and happy to serve during the transition and try and make it as smooth as possible.
Thank you.
I'm Ian Robertson. I'm probably the newest member of this congregation. My home is in South Delta, and I'm here at the request of the bishop. So it makes me what's called the bishop's warden. Due to the corporate structure of St. John Chauncey, there is some question, and I'll admit to the trustees, that some question about what the relationship is here. But in any case, I'm here to help and to serve. And in addition to that, I'm also the diocesan treasurer, so I get to see this not just here, but also in two other locations. And it's a challenge because it's not something that the church has much experience in dealing with and resolving. The other thing I think that's important to try and put you at ease, and I share some of the anxiety that the trustees have said and they will say. The diocese has working for it a process of trying to reintegrate the parishes and to do it in a very sensitive fashion. And to that end, St. Matthew's was the parish that we first had an opportunity to try this on, and it is progressing there. St. Matthias came in August, and the transition took place here in September. As already indicated, you can appreciate this is a much bigger undertaking and facility organization than either of those two. So things may take a wee while to kind of get sorted out, but what we're trying to do is sort them out properly. And the one thing I would want to leave with you is that all these issues that the trustees and I are working on need to be kept in the background. We're here for worship. We're here to express ourselves as children of God, and we're here to practice our faith. And lest it be forgotten, all these other things are background.
Thank you.
Paul. My name is Paul Beckman. I guess I was elected the People's Warden in February of 2010.
Yes.
I was also the People's Warden between 1971 and 75. And Mr. Owen was the Rector's Warden at that time. And, we had some problems then.
We so solved them. We solved them. We did.
So I think the trustees are trying their hardest to make this transition work. And I'm very emotional about it. I get very upset, as Ian can tell you. I get on these meetings and I get upset because things aren't working out the way we're hoping. And I'm not very good in those kind of meetings. So, but we're really
human.
But our hearts are all in the right place, I think. Thank you.
Great, thanks very much.
Thanks.
Any questions for the trustees or just for all of that?
Well, yeah. I'm just concerned about how complicated it is. I don't know what that means.
Sure.
As a trust lawyer, okay. The trustee's fiduciary obligations are fairly clear when they're to the parish. Mm-hmm. So when people talk about it being complicated, I don't know whether they're talking about people not knowing where their fiduciary duties lie. Or
my quick answer to that, and you're probably more knowledgeable than I'm sure you are, but is the trustees understand that. And when I was saying it was complicated, to be honest, I just didn't want to get into all the details of some of the things that are going on, because some of it's either you need quite a long time to either explain the whole story, or some of it is more a confidential type of nature. So certainly something like the sale of the house rectory, some of that is confidential, and you know it's more that rather than understanding fiduciary responsibility.
Blake, I think rectory is a complicated issue.
Yeah, it is.
I think all the other things, there's just a lot of things that have to be done that we're all agreed about how we're going to try and do them. Mm-hmm. The rectory is a more complicated issue. And it's kind of our focus at the moment because we got to try to sort it out.
Yeah, that's right. It is definitely our focus. Yeah. don't know if that helps, but it doesn't really answer your question, but it maybe says,
Well, the other thing to point out related to trustees is that roundabout, according to our bylaws, roundabout now is about the time that a nominating committee would normally start be looking for successor trustees and wardens and so on for election at the vestry.
Right.
And if there are people from within the congregation, like if you'd be interested in doing that, I'd be more than happy than to sit down with anybody that's willing to consider becoming a trustee and where possible making a full disclosure of all of those things so that they can be. You know, the last thing that you'd want is a transition where you have a vestry meeting and you say, see you later, because there's actually a lot of background related to what's happened in the last, I guess, Ian, if we're candid here, 9 years, going back to 2002. So there's actually, It's not just what we're deciding immediately now. It's about reflection on some of the things that have happened over the last 9 years, and resolving those and putting those to bed. And that's you know the best thing that I think we can all do is make sure that there isn't a cloud hanging over. Because as Ian says, we want to be focused on ministry. But if there's a cloud hanging over, then that tends to be disruptive to that because. People do wind up by focusing on it. So I think that the goal, our goal as trustees, is to make sure that any cloud is able to be removed, and if there are folks that are willing to come forward to be trustees at the next vestry meeting, I'd be happy to entertain that conversation and brief you fully on the understanding of what the issues are so that people can be equipped.
There may also need to be a canonical committee as well. Depending on the status of that at the time, too. So, yeah. Need lots of volunteers. Mm.
Any other questions? Okay, thanks. Another issue, I guess, that sort of lands in the lap of the trustees, but if anyone, I wanted to point it out, maybe you're well aware, sorry, if you remember, it'll pop up so you can see me. There has traditionally been a verger here at St. John's. There's a verger's suite, and the role of the verger has probably changed a bit over the years, I would imagine. But essentially now, my understanding is looking for someone who can act as a caretaker of the building, look after the building, basic maintenance and that sort of thing, but also someone who can be here opening part of the security of the building, actually, to live on site. And also acting as verger within worship, so which is sort of gives some guidance, just making sure everything is ready for worship on a Sunday morning in terms of things like the sound system and that type of thing rather than altar guild duties. My sense of the story is that we hoped we'd lined up someone to do that, mm-hmm. and unfortunately it sort of fell apart for reasons that was because. Anyway, it didn't work out for the person that we hoped. And so we need now to get word out. We are looking for a verger, for someone to fill this role going forward. And we'd really like to fill this role as soon as possible, because just the security of the building being a big part of that. So I just wanted to put that out there. If you know of someone that might be interested, you can speak to probably any of the trustees would be just fine, or Andrew, or you can speak to me is fine. I'm just not quite as available as some of the other folks. But it can be a really great position to have, but at the same time, it's not for everybody. So
we've had a retired couple handle it in
right.
the past. It also is a great position for a university student who doesn't have a huge social life. In other words, they don't like to go to the pub every night, and they're happy to be here to provide services as need be. So,
yeah.
Different ends of the spectrum, but it is an important role.
It is.
It's a very important role, and we have had some interest from students. There is a problem with students, if I can be frank. Students either want to be paid an awful lot of money to do it, or else they want to be paid and not do the job.
Yes, that's the kind of job.
Or not be here on Sunday.
Or not be here.
One person was in fact who wanted to be a virgin, but couldn't be here on the weekends. I'm not sure whether we're prejudicing old students by doing that, but you know, the advice we've heard from a number of other people who've had similar roles for people is that the ideal person is a recently retired couple who are still fairly fit, but are looking for a nice place to live. Well, it's not a nice place to live. It's perfectly adequate. As any of you may or may not have seen it, there's a penthouse suite. It's a one bedroom suite, but we need people who can, you know, push a mop and lift a table and do sort of odd jobs around the place, and not just be a caretaker or a sort of person who calls in. We don't have the money to call in somebody every time the screw loose. We need somebody who's reasonably practical and is able to make the decision between something that they can handle and something they need to get a professional in for. So we're looking for that. In fact, I was talking to some of the people in, I don't know if you know, Women at 10 who meet here, Bible Study Fellowship, BSF, and they were saying they might have some contact. They were here this morning, today, and they were very helpful in talking about it. But we're hoping that somebody like that might come up, and soon.
Otherwise, he has to furl after and get started back here.
I know, but it's fine. It's actually very good therapy.
But anyway, just his words for that. Andrew alluded to item number 5 on your agenda already, but just to say, really hoping this goes very well this Sunday to have a choir there. I think it will make a really nice addition to worship, and delighted to have Paul and then to have the choir as well is terrific. This is something Diane Limmer is trying out, if you will. She's got a huge amount of experience, and wonderful to have someone like that sort of stepping in. So quite amazing on that level. But I think she wasn't quite sure how many choir members would be able to do this. So, but delighted. It'd be lovely for the season of Advent, and as Andrew mentioned, we hoped that it would include Christmas Eve, but I think we can work out something for Christmas Eve that will work well too. So that's great, and then and he also mentioned the cathedral choir coming on December the 15th. I believe that's probably 7:30. Have you said
the time? Said the time.
Okay, but 7 or 7:30, I guess, to be announced. But it'll be in the evening, on the Thursday evening. So please let folks know about that. I think that'll be a lovely, service. Great music just a great time to come and worship and prepare for the birth of Christ. So, okay. Anything else upcoming that we should understand?
Don't think so.
Okay, that's great. So, under present and future plan for clergy leadership, it's not clear right now what is happening with this. So obviously, if you will, Andrew and I are here, we had thought that was going to be for a short term. As Andrew mentioned, there was somebody who was planning to come, and obviously that didn't work out for health reasons. The bishop has talked actually to the Archbishop of Canterbury, a couple of names were suggested to him from the Archbishop of Canterbury. My understanding is that there's some follow-up going on with that to see if one of those people will be coming, and I think that would be great if they were coming here soon, but I haven't heard anything more than that except just that to make contact with them. So there is a question mark beside that in terms of exactly the timing of things and where all that will go. But part of that also is...
St. John's Shaughnessy is a different church than it was, let's just say, 6 months ago, just to pull the time out of the air. And what is sort of the ethos of St. John's Shaughnessy at now versus what it was, say, 6 months ago? And that's going to become an important factor in also who is called to come. Even if it's the plan originally was, and I don't know if this is going to change now or not, but the plan originally was for someone to come for a year, maybe a two-year appointment, just to really work out what's going on, because there are a lot of question marks right at the beginning as to how things would unfold. And so that's obviously changed, and so there is much more of a sense of the parish at the moment. And but what style of priest coming in, that's going to be difficult to say, because St. John's Shaughnessy certainly had a history of a strong evangelical church and has a wonderful tradition for a number of years. But again, prior to that, I would say prior to Harry Robinson, I would say it was a different style here. And I'm not saying one is right or wrong, it's just where does the parish as a whole feel the direction should be or could be. And I don't know if you have any thoughts you want to throw in there. I'm not looking for a debate about different styles. I'm just curious as to just even thoughts about.
I have a question. You mentioned where does the parish as a whole think we should be going, and then you also mentioned the bishop making inquiries for a certain individual to come.
Right.
And in between those would be the trustees. I wonder what role trustees would have in determining the characteristics or qualities of the next person.
Yeah, I think it needs to be broader than the trustees, really, because I'm speaking on behalf of them, I suppose, but I'm getting nods, so that's good. But it's going to be very important that the parish, because it's the trustees, I think, it's going to be very hard to gauge what the parish is wanting, which, if you will, direction the parish wants to go. And so what I was referring to with the bishop was that was sort of the original plan, and yes, he's sort of pulling out the contacts in Britain, but I think there probably needs to be some further discussion around that within the parish. So, hang on, Malcolm was...
I see Ian's probably going to make the same point that I will tell Ian's.
Okay, go ahead. If not, you can make a point to Malcolm.
Thinking of other parishes in a more normal process that often happens, when a vacancy occurs, a committee is formed of the people in the parish, and a parish description is prepared, usually after a few months of intensive conversation with members of the parish. That is then submitted to the bishop's office, and it's then publicized for anyone who wishes to take notice of it and to apply. And then the process, to pick up on what John is saying, is the applications then don't go to the parish, but they go to the bishop. And the bishop then goes through a formal and informal screening process of the applicants. And typically, the number of applicants is reduced down to six or perhaps fewer. And at that point, what you can be sure is that the applicants have responded to this description. They've been screened by the bishop. And then the next step of it typically is a committee of people from the parish is called in. They're given the information of each of the applicants, and then they're allowed to interview them. And in a number of cases, I won't say it happens in every case because human beings are human beings, but usually that those who are interviewed are all acceptable to the bishop to get over that hurdle. And so at that point, it's really a parish decision as to which of these people would you think would be best for your parish at this time. Now, that's the process.
Yeah.
It doesn't always work because we're human beings, okay?
Dave, can I just make a little twist on that? It needs to be understood that they're not all just screened by the bishop. There is a bishop's advisory committee.
Yes.
And the bishop's advisory committee is elected at synod. It's made up of six people, three clergy and three lay members. Mm-hmm. And then there's a few other ex officio members, the bishop's personal secretary, Ron Harrison, and the regional archdeacon of wherever the appointment is, mm-hmm. that archdeacon will be there. So it makes up about 10 or 11 people. And the bishop is part of that. I've been part of it from time to time, and the bishop might sort of you're not sure about somebody, and he'll be persuaded sometimes by the rest of the people to say, no, I think you're being hard here, or you're being blind, or whatever it might be. And so there's a lot of, it becomes a very broad sort of screening, and sometimes, and it's often to do with the personality of the person and the personality of the parish. Some clergy think that, well, a priest is a priest is a priest, therefore a parish needs a priest. But to put in the old terms, put a high church person into a low church parish just doesn't work, and vice versa. And you're just, it's a recipe for. And so then they're told, no, you wouldn't be an appropriate person for this parish. And sometimes that priest is all upset, saying, why wasn't I shortlisted? And so on. But,
another scenario that was also is to have interim ministry, and usually there's a scheduled time, so it's a clear time frame, as in a year or 2 years, and it's often if there has been, say, difficulty in the parish, or there could be other reasons, though, where maybe someone, the previous rector was there for a very long time, and it would just a time of transition would be very helpful. So that's another model, that is probably something that would be looked at for here. But as time sort of goes along, that, you know, that may change, that scenario may change as to what's best for person chances going forward. So, sorry.
I just wanted to also add that our bylaws basically specifically provide for a canonical committee that is made up of a much broader representation.
Correct.
It's made up of a number of our synod delegates, a number of the alternate delegates, as well as the wardens and trustees.
Yes.
And so the representation in the selection process is not confined to the trustees.
Right. It's
an important part of the process.
Right.
I also understand that the diocesan regulations provide for when they're looking for a position within the church, that there is a representative from the parish.
Right.
On the screening committee as well. I think there's two. There's two elected from the parish to go. So I think you'll find that any selection process ultimately for clergy is one that fully engages the congregation as it's embodied at that.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
And in fact, not all the trustees may not be on the canonical committee, because it's only the two wardens plus the synod delegates, unless the other trustees are also the synod delegates, they end up not being on the canonical committee.
So obviously there's a process, and that's going to be very important. And just trying to gauge from you folks where the direction you see the parish going, and what would be the best, kind of person to come in and help with that. And that's somewhat difficult, but it's important to go through that process of trying to determine, as best as possible, what's the parish like now? And as I said, because it's a different place than it was 6 months ago, just the size alone, but other factors too. And I think it's very important to try and hear from folks at that point.
And the question we need to be asking in that process is what kind of leadership are we going to need to grow the parish?
Yeah.
Right. It's not just what are we comfortable with.
Right. Yep.
We probably actually have to be taken out of our comfort zone a little bit. I just add that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's good. Mm-hmm. I'd say there could be a number of factors, but that's certainly definitely high on the list, I imagine. Yes.
Before Harry arrived here, the church was fairly, shall we say, staid and dull.
Okay. Yeah.
I remember a church period I attended here 60 years ago.
Right.
And I don't think any of us were forced to go to church that Sunday would have come back.
Right.
I came back because the EYPA was here.
To
move on, before Harry it was dull. Harry came and brought a life, a different slight perspective to it, a little bit more evangelical, not a great deal, but just enough with his personality. The congregation expanded and became more friendship and all the rest going on.
Sure. Yeah.
When David came, it went more evangelical.
And
there are things that aren't taking place now that they're gone, but that I think people have come to like, and it seems when they've done surveys of churches, they find out that the traditional churches are losing members, the evangelical churches are gaining members. Now, you were somewhere in that gaining side.
Yeah, definitely.
I think we have to be careful that we don't fall back. If you look at the, I'll call it before the troubles, comparing the congregation size before the troubles, and when the troubles arrived and the issue of homosexuality came up as an issue in the church, the congregation grew by maybe 10% roughly from people that came in to support the church because of their view on that particular topic. I don't believe that, you know, the large number that voted to separate from the church, it was 500 to 11 actually, was the count I believe on that, but I don't believe that the 500 people really feel that strongly on that issue to leave the church, but they didn't want to lose David. So we have to watch carefully who we bring and the type of ministry that they're going to have, because if we just stay with the old one, we'll go back into my experience of a church parade.
Sorry,
I just want to say also patience and support will also be important. There is no such, I mean, there's, I love the one by Peter Drucker's book, 1966 book, Effective Executive. I think it's one of the best business books still written. But as he said, there's no such thing as a perfect man, as any valet can tell you. And so, whomever it is, I think they should be extended patience and support. And in the meantime, I really appreciate the job that Andrew's doing to set
up.
I think it's really important. I'm back here after years away. And when I first came back here a year and a half ago and saw the dissension, I was gone. I just didn't want any of that. And there was no kind of feeling of empathy or, you know. And I feel it's really important that we need someone who is got a sense of humor, someone who relates to people, and down to earth, because I think that's what brings people in, and that's what grows a congregation, not a solid kind of, you know, business person. I think people come where they enjoy talking or being with that person.
Thank you. That's great. Anything else people want to add?
I liked your word unfolding.
It is, isn't it?
I mean, the call in that is to trust the unfolding.
Thank you.
Well, I think we have to pay the bills, but I don't think we want to judge success by a numbers game. And I think we want to devise a community that is committed to worship, but also to compassion. And is prepared to have more identifying it than the pulpit in terms of its involvement in the community. I don't think we should judge all of our success as to whether the numbers are.
Like I say, we need to pay the bills, but that's
Okay. Thank you. Anything else?
I mean, just with that quick discussion, you can realize it's going to be difficult, but. It's amazing how it does unfold, given a bit, I'll use that word again, sorry, but as time goes on, and in the sense that the parish gets, you know, with trying to gather more information as to what they feel as a group is the best way to move forward and what they would like to see in a priest coming. And at the moment, I think it would be very difficult to put your finger on it, but I think it will become clear as time goes on. And the process really does work, you know, as the odd timer it doesn't, but it does work well because there's a lot of different aspects to it that allow for a lot of information given from the parish, and then there's further discussion amongst the canonical committee and then the meeting with the bishop's advisory committee. So there's a lot of different pieces.
I just want to express a profound sense of gratitude for both Andrew's presence here and the process that brought him here, whatever that process was.
Still not sure what that process actually was. Only
to be sure, to be sure.
Thank you. No, that's great.
One of the things I don't know that everybody knows this or not, but it's with reference to what Malcolm said earlier, that, you know, that Bear gets quite lonely on Sundays. Because I'm only half time. And actually, I can't believe that's not enough, but because, you know, I'm here on Sunday and I'm here on Tuesday and Thursday. At least that's when I'm supposed to be here. I think of you here every day. But it's so very little, and I have to do a lot at home in order to get ready to come back tomorrow and all that sort of stuff. And so,
teacher.
If the parish is going to settle down and grow, I think it needs far more than I'm able to give at the moment, half time.
Yeah.
Yes. It needs to, you know, we've gone from, I'm not sure how many clergy, I mean, because the diocese of Ulster, three. I certainly have met others around who sort of say, well, we're sort of in the wings, like Jean Love and others.
Yeah, the church.
We're out in Richmond, but sort of came in here some of the time. And then there's various people around. But, you know, so we've gone from a huge staff, and a huge staff in offices here, to a tiny staff. That's such a shock that it's very hard to get any sort of rhythm going to get breastfeeding things. Like, you know, AA was saying that we don't see anybody around anymore. And when they were coming in this evening. But it'll work. It'll work.
I think it is important, yeah, to thank you for that, Andrew, because working half-time, anyone who's worked half-time realizes you get paid for working half-time. You don't actually work half-time. It's just too difficult to set boundaries around everything. That's an important part to point out right now, and that does need to change in the sense of what's needed to really move us forward. That's obviously part of the scenario that we want to see. Let's just move though to the way I phrased it on the agenda was what's missing in the parish at the moment. We do not have an unlimited budget, but I think it would be important if people are able to name what are some of the things that you'd like to see. And maybe there are some things that we can manage to do, and I'm obviously looking for things that are going to cost a small amount or a zero budget, but there may be things that we could be doing that would be very helpful, and they can be small things often that can make a huge difference, and just a sense of community and a sense of living in compassion. Yeah. So, what's missing? Yeah.
Well, the obvious one is people. If each person here was to take a three-block area, we divide a map up of the parish. If we were to do that and together a little half-page leaflet, let's say St. John's welcomes you, we're in operation, the time, the hours, and the Christmas program's coming up. We could do this in November, what's left of it. Just let people know the church is here, and we've got these things coming up, and they come, you know, you're welcome to attend. Initially, the church did have most of us attendees living within the parish. In the last few years, we come from Richmond, so people come from all over to come to the church because of what it had here. We have to get the people who live nearby. It's walking distance for us, the easiest church for them to attend, and if they're at all leaning toward the traditional churches rather than the evangelical, the Protestant denominations, this is the church for them. So, if people were willing, we made up a leaflet of some sort that we could just on the way home on Sunday and walk down the street, leaving them the better slots of houses in the neighborhood to invite. Might double our numbers.
Yeah.
Okay. That's.
Sorry. Do you
want to? Well, I was just going to say that I have all prepared several pages to be really appropriate for a website.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now there could be. I'll pass this around. You can see what's on it. And this could be put into a sort of synopsis form for exactly the idea you have. Mm-hmm. Or something like that, or change it, as appropriate. But
One suggestion I would say for things that are going to be left at home, like it was suggesting, you want it short.
Yeah.
If you get them anything that's got to turn over the page, you lost them.
Yes, I know. The purpose of this was a web page, in which case you have the headings that you click on. If you want to know what time the services are, you just go to services and there it is.
And so website on screen board. Yes. Mm-hmm.
It has to be on screen. I was going to say that. I wanted to say that. I thought the website is really important.
Yeah.
And because that's what people go to. So the website, you can have extensive, you can have sermons, you can have, you know, there's just so much right there, and which also speaks volumes about, you know, it gives the message that you know we're really here. Yeah. It's really alive.
Well, that's great. So that's in process anyway, isn't it?
It's in process.
Yeah. So at the moment, there's basically just a one-page website. It doesn't do a heck of a lot for anybody at the moment, but it's there at least. And the plan really was to update it as soon as possible. Well, I guess we're at the as soon as possible now.
So. Under construction. It doesn't take you very far.
Well, that's great.
I agree with the notion of providing some sort of brochure, but I'm thinking you might want to capitalize on the fact that if this indeed is happening on the 15th of December, that would be a good reason, And it's not a huge commitment that someone might come because, well, I'll come to this and listen to, to the Christmas service or the carols. Mm-hmm. I think it would be a good start.
That's a great idea.
There's going to be a Christmas mass
and will there
just be the late service
for
the early
one too,
or the early service?
We've sort of struggled with that, and when John said what's missing, the big thing that's missing for me is a children's program.
Yes. I was just going to say a children's program.
And it's terribly hard to know. I mean, it's a chicken and egg thing. If you have the children, you have a children's program. If you don't have the children, there is no program. And it's very hard. We probably have to start a program with no children to start with. That's relevant to Christmas Eve. You know, I don't think we're in a position to have multiple services. It doesn't feel like a celebration of Christmas if we've got two or three services with six people at each or whatever it might be. But I would propose that we have just the one service on Christmas Eve, and I think it probably should be the late one, which would be probably 11 o'clock, which is the sort of common time around the city, and then a service on Christmas morning, probably 10 o'clock, and try to put all our effort into those. But that does cut out the children, but at the moment,
we have the odd young family.
Yes, that's right.
Thought maybe that if young families could come, there was sort of a daycare type thing.
It may be if there's any sense of that it would work, we could certainly have an afternoon service for young children or young families or something like that.
I think that does make sense. In the past, it's been one of those lovely services of chaos, where the church is overflowing with people, and there's people are sitting in the aisles. It's a fire marshal disaster situation. But even if it's not, to have a late afternoon, what I'll call children-friendly service, so there may not be daycare, there may not be childcare, but just a shorter service that is accessible for families in the neighborhood probably makes sense.
You can have it at 4 o'clock.
Talking about Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
Not every Sunday. You're talking about Christmas Eve.
Yeah. That's correct. Just for Christmas Eve. That's
good feedback anyway. Not sure who is going next. So, go ahead. Yeah.
What's missing? Maybe I'm reading between the lines or hearing, but I'll speak for myself. I think it would be nice as the unfolding moves, maybe even thinking after Christmas, because we know what December's like, just to have a time when people, where we do gather to say what we would like to offer.
Thanks.
And that it's And also a time to be together to pray. And
yes. Thank you.
Not just be together during the services on Sunday,
right.
But
right.
To have.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful. Again, I know this is maybe a little bit more formal than I think than what you're suggesting, but
tonight is
just the mm-hmm. sort of thing. Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
John, just a tiny comment is signage to say what we need. Because now we're saying all kinds of good things and so on. And I know that Chris and I just, you know, the thing is you're trying to see, I'm noticing the signage, you know, and people drive by and you want to see what will be happening. So,
there is a new sign.
The restaurant board is
wrong.
You're still guessing.
you meaning signage, just an upcoming event?
I mean the website, number one.
Sure.
The signage, and then, of course, on the outside there, we should have the website there because people can just see.
I think it is. It's there now.
Is it?
It's there now.
This
week it went up? Or
the new sign.
It's been up for more than a week.
Sorry. Okay. Thank you. But that's a good point. I mean, there's a lot of traffic going past, and people do those things. Sorry. Yeah.
I think what's missing is our children.
Yeah.
I mean, my children went here for 20 years. I don't think I can get them back.
Yeah.
They've been settled.
Yeah.
But if we rebuild this in the image of the people around this table, we will have the wrong demographic in terms of what we need.
Yeah.
When I first came here, there was only one other family in the Sunday school.
Right.
So there was a period when it didn't have a lot of young children, but we certainly need the advice of a younger generation because it's actually quite a marvelous opportunity for young people frustrated with church to have one of the best sanctuaries in the city, a bishop who's paying the bills.
Yeah, that scenario for me.
Works just fine.
So, I mean, it actually is quite a perfect crucible for someone who could get younger people involved not just sitting in the thing, but in giving us the leadership. There's a marvelous opportunity here.
Yeah, you're
right. As long as it doesn't just become the people, people like me.
That's great.
Other young people, you're saying.
I'm just thinking about that in terms of the location is so optimal in terms of people driving by and finding it and seeing it and being drawn, and what can be offered to people that is supportive of family life and encouraging, that will then possibly translate into folks who then become part of the congregation. Question around what families need and what's supportive. Subject dear to my own heart.
Great.
But what sorts of things could be, I think it's very exciting because there's so much possibility, and we have this amazing space and the possibility for many things. What can we put out there that will engage the community and let them know that it's a place that wants to be supported and inviting?
Yeah, great.
John, I think that we, around this table, just looking at a number of people that I know and ourselves, we have a lot of children connected to ourselves. We were invited, but we have our grandchildren and our children, and I think that around this table, the networks for our children are pretty strong.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Other thoughts? Anything else that's missing? Do we want to go
on? One more question.
Yeah.
Is there any? What is the association with St. John's Shaughnessy and St. John's Richmond? Is there any connection at all?
St. John's Shaughnessy and St. John's Richmond.
Kind of separate, is it?
They're completely separate. Yeah.
Okay.
St. John's Richmond and St. John's Vancouver are connected.
Okay.
Sorry, just to clarify it. Okay. But if you will, they're both part of an ANIC or an Anglican network in Canada, right. As opposed okay. to, right, so, they're, right, so there's no connection. But, no, thanks. Those are the clarifying questions that are helpful because, you know, Andrew and I have been involved in, and the trustees have been involved in a lot of these conversations when you forget to, there are some things that people still want to know. Okay, anything else?
Sean came out of St. John's here, though.
Yes.
And that was a plant church.
Yes.
So there is a connection.
Yes, there, yeah. So I guess if there was, but in terms of actual...
No.
Yeah.
But it came out of Anik. No, it didn't come out of St. John's.
As
part of the Anglican Church of Canada.
Well, Sean was moving into the ministry before the issue came here. He's involved in the area that's still here.
Yeah, but he's not ordained in the Anglican Church of Canada.
No, I'm not sure.
He's not visible. Yeah.
The other side.
Other thoughts? Any? That's great. That's very helpful to hear some of that. That's good. I just put something, new options being considered, and just, I mean, maybe it's obvious to all of you, but when I came to just have a look around the building not all that long ago, it's a massive place, and the church is very large itself, but this wing, if you will, is huge in terms of the classrooms downstairs, and the number, I don't know how many offices there are, there must be 20 offices at least in the place. So a couple of other things are being looked at to consider. Nothing is set in stone, but there are things like trying to use some of the space. And so some talk has been around the idea of a school, and either a school coming in to use the space or a school being started, if that's a possibility. Another is around choir. And Diane Loomer was very curious about the idea of using some of the space for other, if you will, a place of learning for choirs. So it's sort of a coming together place for that. We have a number of fantastic choirs in the city, and could see that as this could be a base in some way for that. And there could be other possibilities, but there are some other things being considered. I think that's important just to sort of throw that out in for you to think about too, and realize that there's a lot of space here. We've got, as pointed out, we've got the bishop paying the bills for a little while, anyway, some of the bills, and so it gives us a chance to really, you know, think about how we could connect, perhaps in different ways than we have traditionally as a parish here. And for me, that's another source of could be an exciting possibilities for that's right.
Is the AA paying for use of the rooms here, or are they being because
I think they pay. My guess is it's probably quite small.
It's a
donation.
Yeah. Okay, but the reason I'm asking because daycare are often looking to needs for daycare.
Yes.
And
absolutely.
And you know, there's a lot of space downstairs.
There's a lot of space.
It worked very well. So that sort of thing is a rental. You could bring in someone to cover the cost.
Yeah, right. And that could be very, you know, it can build a strong connection. We talk about children, and there can be ways of building a connection with a group rather than just a rental group. Someone had a comment here.
I was going to say that the parish used to have daycare.
Yeah.
It would be nice to see that there was daycare because that brings in families, as you said.
Yeah, just a building at least. Yeah.
As a school.
Yeah.
It's very interesting, sort of who pays what. AA actually are offer the place for free, and they give a donation without any arrangement. We do have another group, which is a very large Bible study group. There is an arrangement with them that they give to the church 25% of anything that they receive. Problem is that they receive very little, and so they give the 25% becomes very little. And we've had some conversations with them about this, because we sort of they're a large group, you know, they're three or four times the size of AA, and AA are who it's purely donation give way 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 more than they do, and so but and then but
And it becomes a problematic because they're learning and loving the Lord. And as they said, God will provide. And I said, that's very flattering to think that we're God.
And so,
actually, they've been, since we've had that conversation, they've been so much better. Instead of saying, why are the bathrooms dirty? They're saying, we'll clean them for you. You know, and there's a much greater sense of ownership, and they're here and they're part of the place, and to try to reduce our costs and keep the doors closed and not open them. It's been a wonderful improvement.
What is the aim for the demographics of that Bible study?
It's probably quite young. I mean, I would think it's strongly Asian.
Oh, I see.
Probably from what I've seen, I've been there a few times, and it's probably 70, 80, 90% Asian people, and they're probably most of them young mothers, mm-hmm. and they're probably in their 30s and 40s. That's what they do.
One thing that crosses my mind is you talk about choirs, and I speak as a member of the Vancouver Bach Choir, although I'm not there tonight. In fact, I'm not there until after Christmas. I should be, but I'm not. And as the parent of and step-parent of three kids who've been through that organization, they have a total of about 400 children in about 10 choirs. Scattered all over the city. And it seems to me this would be the ideal moment for them to consolidate into one single place. And that's another wonderful way of getting some kids around this place.
It's a great organization, absolutely.
And it's well run. And I've got all the contacts, and I'm more than willing to start asking people about that.
It highlights the importance of having a verger, though. Before you can rent out the facility.
Absolutely.
You need a verger that can be relied on.
Well, they wouldn't be till next year. It would be a year before they could be there. It would be September next.
It's just a reminder that a couple or something like that, you need a verger. And I would have a question for Ian, and that is the diocesan office, if that would be a possibility. I have no idea when the lease is up for renewal downtown, but perhaps that could be something that could be considered.
It's been a conversation about that, absolutely.
It's crossed my mind and the minds of others, and not just 5 years out.
About what?
The diocese has offices in the
Yes, right.
Kitty corner from the library, and we pay $100,000 for the fair rent.
Yes, well, $100,000 for lots of room.
We'll only charge you $90.
Why not?
By those numbers, they were good numbers at the time. To push the point a bit, if we can find a tenant for the place, say in a year's time, we move lock, stock, and barrel here. I'm not saying we will, but if we did that,
it's another thing being considered.
It would be one of those workouts.
Thank you
for
that idea.
That's good.
Yes.
Yes, please. You mentioned the rectory that the Shorts are playing. What's the status of the second rectory?
It is rented out, and it's rented for another year.
Until June, end of June next.
End of June of
end of July. Sorry, thank you.
There's no clergy using it.
No.
But it is rented at market rates.
Right. So it's rented out, and then at the end of July, we can either renew the rental or.
And let's be frank about that. It's rented to a clergyman who I guess is not a member of the Anglican Church of Canada. His name is Eric Thurston, and his wife's Judy. And everybody seemed to think that was reasonable to leave them there till July 31st next year. And so they've got kids, and they can make changes in the summer. And they're supposed to be. I'm told it's market rents that we're getting.
Thank you, though. No, good question.
Yeah.
Where are the two houses? There used to be one across the street.
West 29th and West 35th.
You may be thinking of the old house on King Edward Road.
Oh, that's not the one we're talking about.
No. It's 29th and MacDonald.
When he said the one
that's here. Harry lived there.
Yeah, that's been here. Any other thoughts or interesting?
Well, I'm just a little concerned about the day off. The extent to which past struggles focused on the bishop versus, David Short. And I think what we need is healing. And I'd worry. The economics might be one thing, but I would want to be concerned that that not be viewed as a takeover on a theological issue.
Hopefully with a bit of time.
I don't see why that would matter.
Any other thoughts on this? As I said, it's amazing what is here. Just as the sheer size of the place. That a lot of groups are looking for space, and some of those groups we might like to have here, and others probably not.
I think something to bear in mind is that we have probably one of the best equipped kitchens in the city.
Yeah,
And as an opportunity for fellowship around food, there is a real opportunity out there. We've had up to 40 or 50 young people in here on a Wednesday evening on a regular basis. So because of its proximity to the arteries,
right?
So it's a, you know, as we look at leadership and vision, I think Blake's right. We have to look at someone that's going to be able to attract and develop a ministry within those young people, the future leaders in this church.
Well, the bus service on Granville is not what it used to be. Before SkyTrain on Cambie, you can wait here now for half an hour for a bus.
King Edward.
I know certainly the food program at St. Mary's has certainly been a huge community builder, not only within the parish, but as outreach.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I would have said it's sort of 50-50. The seniors from the parish who come to the
parish,
outreach. Who come in.
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah.
And there's got a lot of young families in, who have been coming to church, who help do the cooking.
Yes, they do. And become much more involved in the life of the church. Absolutely. Anything else? That's great. As far as I'm concerned, I'm looking towards wrapping up, but I wanted if any topic that hasn't been touched on, this is a good time to raise it. But just to sort of to conclude, the point was just to bring some people together, hear some voices, hear some thoughts, and for me, very, very helpful. I'm assuming the same for Andrew. I hope the same is felt by all of you too. There is a community forming here. And we want to support that, encourage that, and also feel that we need to work towards the future. And as I said, that is becoming a little bit clearer as we move along, and we want to encourage that along the way. So thank you for giving up some of your time on this horrible evening outside. Appreciate that. Thank you to Andrew for making tea and coffee, and looks like he was baking all day as well. So thank you very much.
Judith does that.
Judith, yes, sorry.
Let's just ask one thing.
Of course, yeah.
This is quite personal for me because I'm just new, and it's odd to be back in a place where I came to Anglican Young People, so was cooking in the kitchen for 5 years and was married here and my children back, and now I'm back and don't know anybody.
Right.
So it's really odd for me.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if we could have name tags, because, and if something new comes in, it's kind of terrifying to not know anybody. And I'm visually impaired a little, so.
Yeah.
And if nobody can do that, pardon?
Make them
big. Yes, large. And I would be willing to make them if we had to, nobody else, because it seems like we're short of people.
Okay, can I leave that? Thank you. That's a great point. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anything else, just as we wrap up? Great. Thank you again. Thank you for your time. And maybe we'll just stand and join in saying the grace together.
grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, and the love of God, and the fellowship of the Holy Spirit, be with us all evermore.
Amen.
Thanks very much, everyone.